It is a State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. We seek to get accurate gauge of public sentiment here in Wisconsin heading into the general election a few weeks away. Polls are going on all around us, and they try to reflect that. We turn now to the latest Marquette University Law School poll. Join in on the poll numbers, whether voter sentiment on issues reflect your views, your curiosities about polling methodologies, and your confidence in polling in America. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Charles Franklin is professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette Law School poll. Charles, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good morning. Well, let's focus first on the U.S. Senate, because that was the headline maker from your poll conducted October 3rd through 9th. And so we saw incumbent Senator Ron Johnson pulling ahead of Democratic challenger Mandela Barnes with that 6-point lead. Can you explain what you're seeing in this race?
Sure. We've seen a trend here from a Barnes lead by 7 points in August, right after the primary, to then in September, Johnson ahead by just 1 point. And then in this October poll, Johnson ahead by 6. So there's been a trend there. Most of that movement has come from independents, who after the primary were very pro-Barnes, then became more evenly balanced in September and are now leaning to Johnson by 6 points. In contrast, the partisans have remained over 90%, close to 95%, behind the candidate of their party. So we're seeing very little crossover voting among partisans, but a good deal of movement for independents.
And certainly tongue-in-cheek here, but with such extreme polarization in Wisconsin, are independents a dwindling set, a dwindling group?
Well, we actually haven't seen them go down by very much over the last few years. But it also depends on how you think of independents. Mm-hmm. If you talk about independents as people who, when you ask them, do you think of yourself as a Democrat or Republican or an independent, say independent, then that's been a fairly steady share of the electorate of around 40% or so. On the other hand, if you ask, if you lean towards one party or another, then it's only about 8% that say, I'm an independent and I'm not closer to either political party. So there is a little difference right there. The leaners, those who lean Democratic or lean Republican, are each about 16% of the electorate. And whereas the partisans vote 90 to 95% with the party, these independent leaners are voting between 75 and 80% or 85% with their party. So they still definitely lean to a party, but they're not locked in the same way the pure partisans are. We include those leaners with the pure independents in our independent category.
Okay, that's interesting. And, you know, something that really stuck out to me is that among Republicans, 84% say they're absolutely certain to vote in November's election or have already voted. 83% of Democrats, 69% of independents. Is that normal for midterms, or do you expect an especially high turnout? I mean, you know, barring weather, of course.
Right. Now, these do point to higher than usual turnout rates. More in line with the high 2018 turnouts that we saw 4 years ago, which set a record for a midterm. Mm-hmm. Not as high as you get in a presidential election like 2020, when we also set an extremely high turnout rate. You know, also remember, you have until election day afternoon to decide if you're going to vote, if push comes to shove. So this is one of those areas that can shift a good deal, at least at the margins, and especially between the parties between now and election day. In August, we had 1 point more Republicans saying they were certain to vote than Democrats. But in September, it was a 3-point Democratic advantage. Now it's another 1 point Republican advantage. Those are all so close together, it's hard to know who's really having higher turnout. I think the best answer would be it looks like turnout is very similar for both parties, with independents a fair bit less likely to vote, which is also normal in a midterm.
Charles Franklin with us, director of the Marquette University Law School poll, gauging public opinions as we head into the midterm. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Charles, let's turn to the governor's race. The Wisconsin Democracy Campaign says groups supporting GOP governor candidate Tim Michaels have been outspending those favoring incumbent Democratic Governor Tony Evers by more than 3-1. Michaels narrowed his matchup deficit against Evers to 1 percentage point in your poll. How do you think campaign spending is factoring into public opinion?
Well, I think the deluge of advertising that is the biggest visible thing that campaign spending buys. If anybody even turns on their television, they've been exposed to the advertising. And a lot of advertising from the Democratic and independent pro-Democratic groups as well. I think it's likely that these are a big part of why we see the shifts we do in both races. The governor's race has not moved as much as the Senate race. The governor's race has gone from a 3-point Evers lead in August to a four-point lead in August to a 3-point lead in September to now this 1-point edge for Evers. That one looks like a pure toss-up at this point. And there's been good agreement with other polls. There have been, I think, 11 or 12 polls other than mine since September. And in the governor's race, almost all of those show a very tight race. I should say there is more variation in the Senate race, with mine and AARP and Fox showing a 6, 5-point and 4-point Johnson leads. But there have also been a couple, including the CBS poll, showing the race at 1-point Johnson lead. So people should understand there is variation across the polls, but there's more variation in that Senate race, whereas the governor's race, almost everybody has that one as a very close toss-up.
I recall in June, your poll suggested that former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish had a better chance than Michaels at defeating Evers, and voters advanced Michaels. Are Republican voters who initially didn't pick Michaels, are they gelling around that his campaign now?
They seem to be. That voter loyalty that I mentioned to partisans going with their party has been in the low 90s for Michaels in August and September, despite the primary being close by. We did see it drop just a little bit in October to 88% among Republicans. That's a small enough movement to not be sure whether it's really shifted or not. But the October data were just a little bit lower in Republican loyalty compared to the low 90s that we'd seen in the governor's race before that.
Law professor and poll director at Marquette University, Charles Franklin, is here to break down his latest polling data, what the results could safely predict within the margin of error. Join in on polling data, whether you shy away from participating in polls or not. The anatomy of poll questions. Your thoughts on the Marquette poll, 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's been called the gold standard in Wisconsin politics. We dive into the latest Marquette University Law School poll, how independent voters are thinking about 3 weeks from November's vote. And by the way, there is one more Marquette poll before the midterms. Join in what you wonder about the poll process, the results, 800-642-1234. Charles Franklin stays with us, director of the Marquette Law School poll. Let's bring in Stefan now in Prairie du Sac. Stefan, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, your intro just now touches on my question. I've been hearing poll results for a number of months, and they have always, you know, too close to call and, you know, interesting information. But I'm interested in the actual process of the polling itself, and who are they collecting the data from, and how do they go about doing that?
Stefan, thank you. Charles.
Terrific. I'm happy to do this seminar. So first of all, we still interview by telephone. We conduct 75% of our interviews by telephone, by landline. Let me say it again. We do 75% by cell phone and 25% by landline. We use a method called random digit dialing, in which we take the list of all area codes and exchanges in the state. You can just buy that list and then attach a 4-digit random number to complete the number. And then you dial that number, and that gives every number in the state, whether it's a landline or a cell phone, an equal chance to be selected into the sample. And that's the way probability sampling works. That's why the sample of numbers that we get is representative in a certain sense of all of the numbers in the state. And then we call up to several times in trying to reach people over the course of the week. We're in the field for 7 days now, from Monday through Sunday. We've expanded that length of time because, as I'm sure everyone knows, it's harder to get voters on the phone to talk to us about the poll. When someone picks up, we typically get around 35% who agree to do the interview. But the problem is that foot in the door, lots and lots of people don't pick up their phone anymore. Mm.
In 2020, the polls missed a chunk of former President Trump's voters who refused to participate in polling. Is that on your mind for polling in the midterms?
It always is. In 2020, the polling average here in Wisconsin was off by 8 percentage points, overstating Biden's margin by 8 points. We were also off, but by 4 or 3 points, 3 points for the high turnout model, 4 points for our average turnout model. So we did better than the average, but that was still more than the 2.2% average error we've had over the full life of the poll. So that 2.2 average error and the 4-point normal error, normal turnout error, should give listeners a sense of sort of another way of thinking about the uncertainty in our poll. We would could easily be within 2 points of the result. It wouldn't be shocking if we were within 4 points. Hmm. The only time we've been worse than 4 points in error was in 2016 for the presidential race, where we were off by over 6 points. So that was by far our worst performance. And there's what we think is the Trump factor, underestimating Trump's vote. However, in the midterm in 2018, we had the governor's race tied at zero, directly tied. Evers won by 1.1. And we had the Senate race at 11, and Tammy Baldwin won by 10.8. So it's an interesting question whether our midterm this year will look like the 2018 midterm, or for that matter, the accurate 2014 midterm, or whether those things that have troubled us in the two elections with President Trump on the ballot will come back to haunt us this time. Really, we can speculate about it, but check back after the election and then we'll know how we did.
Stefan, thank you for that. John now in Boaz. John, what's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. And I just want to ask your guest if they're voting on the medical marijuana usage in Wisconsin.
John, thank you. Medical marijuana as an issue. Charles Franklin?
Right. We have not asked medical marijuana this time. We've asked it in the past and found over 80% in favor of legalizing medical marijuana. This time we did ask about marijuana being made legal or not just that way, with no further explanation. 64% favored legalizing, 30% were opposed. Back in 2014, that was 42 in favor of legalization, 52 opposed. So, and we've tracked this repeatedly over time. So there's been a real shift in views of legalization of marijuana in general. And that shift is across the parties, though a majority of Republicans still oppose legalization, 50 to 43, while two-thirds of independents and over 80% of Democrats favor legalization.
Looking at the other issues in this current survey, inflation really, you know, was the leader in terms of people saying they're very concerned about rising costs. What did you make of the issues and how they stacked up?
Sure. And inflation has led the list of nine issues that we've asked since August of 2021. Over the last year, we've been asking this set of concern about issues questions. Inflation rose steadily until June this past summer, fell off a little bit in August, and then has been sort of flat since August. So not quite as high concern as in June, but still the number one issue overall. I think the biggest thing we see is how much difference there is between Republican and Democratic concerns. Republicans put their top three issues as inflation, illegal immigration, and crime. Democrats, it's abortion policy, gun violence, and public schools. And independents, it's public schools, inflation, and gun violence. So you can see that the two parties don't overlap at all in their top three issues. But independents share two issues share the public schools and gun violence issue with Democrats, share inflation with Republicans.
Talking about public opinion with Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll, let's go to Andy in Milwaukee. Hi, Andy.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Professor Franklin, I've long admired your work. I'm wondering if you're picking up anything in the polls about the issue of race. Over the last couple of days, just watching a Packer game and a Badger game, I've been shocked at the way Mandela Barnes is portrayed. It's like the old Willie Horton ads, and I'm wondering if you're hearing any of that from people.
I'm sorry, a race, did you say?
Depicting race. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly we're seeing a lot of advertising that's focused on crime, that uses imagery that certainly has racial components to it. I think that what we're seeing is some evidence that that crime issue is being used to drive the election. That's, of course, the purpose of those advertisements, those negative ads. On the other hand, we're seeing the crime issue flatten out and even come down a little bit in the importance people rate it. On our measure of how people feel about Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement that I've been monitoring as a way of getting at the salience of race and people's opinions, that one has stayed pretty stable throughout the year, with about an even percentage who say they have a favorable and an unfavorable view of the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. Now, you can argue about whether that's the best measure of racial attitudes, but because we have a long history with that issue or that opinion, we're using that to see if the salience of race has risen or fallen. And at this point, we haven't seen a lot of movement in that.
We only have a few seconds left, but the next and final poll ahead of the election has a planned release on November 2nd. How concerned are you of releasing a poll near an election and the impact on the outcome?
Sure. Well, that's actually why we released it on the Wednesday before the election. That gives almost a full week for the news to go out, for the campaigns to respond however they want. And then we try to be silent from that Wednesday through Election Day. There are other pollsters that release on the Sunday before the election. or even the Monday morning before the election. We made a deliberate decision at 10 years ago when we started the poll that we would release the Wednesday before the election, and then it's up to the campaigns for how they want to respond to that and run the end of the campaign.
Charles, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Charles Franklin is professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, directs the Marquette Law School poll. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to the work of the Joint Legislative Council. Every 2 years, they create these study committees to dig deeper on certain issues when the legislature is out of session. A 13-member study committee on the commercial building permitting process is set to hold its fourth hearing Thursday. The group is tasked with poring over all the steps and stakeholders in the permit process, coming up with recommendations on how to improve the system governing building construction. Join in on building permits, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel's district includes Sheboygan, Fond du Lac, and Ozaukee counties, among others. He chairs the 2022 Legislative Council Study Committee on the Commercial Building Permitting Process. State Senator Strobel, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good morning. Can you give us a bit of a progress report on this committee as you started meeting in July?
Sure. Yeah, we have. We're going into our fourth meeting, and normally we'll probably end up having five or so. It all depends how things go. But they've been going rather well. Well, again, this study committee is on commercial building permitting process. And as you said, these occur every 2 years during the second year of the legislative session. And really, this is a deeper dive than we can normally do during the regular legislative session. And typically it's something that legislators and the public have said, gee, we've got some issues here. There's some things we really need to figure out. And generally, they're a little more technical in nature. And there's a committee put together, and there's two Democrats and two Republicans. I happen to chair this committee. But really, the focus is on getting people from outside the Capitol, getting stakeholders who serve on this committee, experts in the area. We have a number of building inspectors. We have developer-type people. We have plan review people, we have architects, we've got an attorney, and they all have their perspective on these issues. And we can hopefully hear from everyone and meld them all together and try to come up with a system that, you know, government can certainly be bureaucratic. And in an area like this, we want to, you know, be as common sense and as practical as we can, and to minimize those kind of bureaucratic snafus that often come up. Because permitting for commercial buildings, I mean, it's really about economic development. And, you know, we certainly want to facilitate that. So that really has been the end game as we've been looking at it since we started.
You mentioned technical issues. Why should the commercial building permitting process be reviewed? What types of technical issues are being encountered around the state?
Sure. Well, the main thing is the state agency that is responsible or has historically been responsible for reviewing these things, DSPS, they have really been delaying the process. And that was really the main impetus to get together. And so we need to find a better way to be doing this. And over the past, I'd say, 8 or so years, there's been more of a focus of having local authorities do the much more of the permitting process. And as I said, historically, this enforcement has been centralized at the state level. But when you have the locals taking over more and more of this, there's called, it's a delegated process, and they have to have show certain competencies to be able to do this. But many municipalities have begun to approve those competencies and thus taken over some of this process. And we have found out that they've been able to get this work done generally in like 1 to 2 weeks when it's been 6 weeks plus at the state level. And there's some benefits too when it's done locally. They know the people they're dealing with, and they're just much closer. They have a better understanding. I mean, you can imagine if you're at the state and you get a big roll of plans. I mean, you know, where is this? How is this being done? When is this happening? I mean, there's a lot of things that it's hard for them to be able to understand when it's done locally. We've determined that it certainly has worked better, and statistically as it has indicated that. So that's really the delays at the state level is the problem. And there's a number of things that we are talking about implementing actually for the state to help facilitate what they are going to be doing also for those plans that do go to them.
Is your committee looking into whether the Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS, is staffed at the right level to deliver the streamlined, efficient permitting process that you envision?
Yeah, we look at that. And I think that with the outsourcing to the local municipalities that we have seen going on, and they are just, many of them are just wanting to do more of it. They'd like to do all of it, frankly, some of them. But we believe that they're staffed adequately, and certainly DSPS has every ability to come to the legislature and ask for more people if they feel that's what is necessary. But again, we want to try to take work off their plate, so we know that that's not an issue. And when DSPS at the start of 2020 created a new system, and I think that seems to be at the root of a lot of the problems that we've been seeing. And it was an appointment-based system for scheduling plan reviews to a first-in, first-out scheduling system. And the goal of that new system was to reduce the average turnaround time, but actually it hasn't done that. In fact, it's extended that. What they used to have was an appointment-based system where you would set an appointment and then you would, so possibly your plans weren't even done yet. The private sector professional who would be preparing these plans would set an appointment X number of weeks out, and then they would work to have those plans completed for that meeting. Because oftentimes, you know, there's a tight window from the start of a project to when Sure. you have to get into the ground.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that sometimes you would have people that would book this time, and then all of a sudden, whoa, we're not ready to go. We can't do it. And that wasn't efficient. And that certainly isn't on DSPS. But another issue too is sometimes the plan would be sitting there, you'd schedule it for, you know, 6-7 weeks out or what have you. And the plan reviewer would pick it up for the first time and say, oh, I can't look at this. This is wrong or this is wrong. Mm. And so we'd like to see better communication with DSPS too. And that's one thing that we've also looked for and have incorporated in some of the bill drafts that we've created. And we've created three of them, is to allow for a short window for DSPS to actually take a look at these plans and just a quick look and say, okay, yeah, this is good to go. Let's get this scheduled. Or no, you need to do such and such, and you can't even schedule this yet. Again, just to be a little more efficient in that regard too.
On scheduling and communication there, we have State Senator Dewey Strobel with us, heads up a 13-member study committee looking at possible changes to the commercial building permitting process. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. It sounds as if you really want more local control of the commercial building permitting process, and that you're hearing that this could really help expedite these building projects. But, you know, in terms of having a uniform statewide commercial building code, what do you do about local entities that have local codes that don't conform to the state code? And now you're putting control at the local level.
Well, they always have to meet a minimum of what the state code is. And generally, they don't go beyond that. So we really don't see a problem with that. And then we've had a number of those local people on this committee that they've got their credentials, they've got the training, they've got the experience, frankly, just as much, if not more, than many of the people at the state level who are doing this work. So that doesn't seem to be a problem. So what we're looking at, one of the bill drafts that we also are talking about actually expands the types and number of plans that can be reviewed by local governments with a delegated plan review authority. And we're also looking to DSPS to be a little more engaged with the local authorities to just make sure that they are working together and coordinating and everybody's on the same page. And there's been a lack of communication, frankly, and maybe it's because they don't have enough time. I don't know. That's what they've been saying. But they need to work more closely with the locals because they also want to make sure that they're doing what the state wants them to. So there just needs to be more collaboration between the two and, something like even a quarterly newsletter that they could put out. We've talked about that's going to maybe touch on some of the topics because on occasion, certainly the locals will call the state and say, hey, you know, there's always new processes and new ways to build things coming up. And, hopefully with the collaboration that we've seen, we will be seeing more and more between the local and the state, and they'd be kind of the clearinghouse for some of that at DSPS, that they could do a quarterly communication that would, just help everybody stay on the same page. And we think that's a good thing for DSPS to do in this process.
Part of the committee work is to look at the approach of other states, to look for policies that Wisconsin may adopt that you find elsewhere. Has the committee looked into other states and what they're doing?
Yeah, we have. In fact, some states don't do anything. It's all local. There's no state oversight. But other states do what we had been doing. That was just the schedule the meeting type thing, where you would schedule that meeting. And then also other states do the first in, first out, which is what DSPS went to in 2020. But now we're going to do really a hybrid. We're going to allow for both of those. We're going to allow for a scheduled time as well as a first in, first out. Now, when you do the scheduled time, there's a fee that needs to be paid. And if you do cancel that date, within, I think we're talking about 2 weeks of that scheduled time, you will forfeit your fee. So there's a disincentive just to, willy-nilly schedule a time. I mean, it's going to cost money because that takes up the resources of DSPS. So there's certainly a disincentive to not be canceling those meetings. So really what we're doing is a hybrid. We're allowing the ability to both schedule a meeting, and then we're allowing the ability to do the first in, first out, where you would put it in and you might end up getting yours a lot. You might end up, there might be a gap that you could then with your first in, first out, have your review sooner. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of up to the user to decide which technique that they would like to use. And we think that that seems to be what the stakeholders out there are looking for.
Republican State Senator Dewey Strubel of Cedarburg chairs a special legislative study committee examining the permitting process for commercial buildings in our state. Join in on building codes, on permit requirements, compliance, what you want to convey to the study committee. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get briefed on the work of the Legislative Study Committee on the commercial building permitting process. In the committee's introductory notes, it says state-level law and policy changes have increased efficiency in Wisconsin's process over the past decade. Lawmakers and industry proposed additional steps to streamline the commercial building permitting process with legislation that passed the legislature last session but was vetoed by the governor. Join in, 800-642-1234. We have Republican State Senator Dewey Strobel, who chairs the study committee, stays with us. Senator Strobel, the committee is drafting this proposal that would allow the construction of certain building components like foundations or footings before a plan review is approved. What effect would this have on how quickly commercial building projects could be completed?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is the third bill draft that we're talking about to expanding the early start authority. And really, the biggest issue and the bottleneck we see is with plumbing permits. That's often early in the construction process, but yet that one has been kind of slow to roll out, and that could delay an entire project. So under current law, plan submitters, they have the option to pay an additional fee and request permission to start construction of footings and foundations of a building before plan review is completed. And this is, understand, done at the building owner's risk, but it certainly helps to move the construction process along. Everything, of course, has to be per plan and per the code. But of course, they're kind of rolling the dice on this, but it allows them to move things along, and we have not seen a problem with this process. So what we're looking at doing is expanding the early start authority to also include underground exterior plumbing, underground interior and exterior plumbing, which is the next step in the construction process after the footings and foundations are completed. So again, one more way to hopefully streamline this process so that, again, these buildings will be built according to code. There's no question of that, but it's going to allow a little more of an efficient process to allow these things to move ahead more quickly.
But what about a situation where you're needing to change the land or fill in wetlands and that process? What would that mean for an early start or a pre-approval?
Well, we didn't touch on any of that. The study committee appears to have a rather narrow face in terms of what they're doing. But there were other directions we could have gone in terms of the committing process, permitting process, things like environmental permitting, as you referenced, insurance liability, reviews or revisions to the commercial building code, or, you know, inspections on new and existing buildings. But we didn't go there on those things. We really targeted our committee to this area that we're talking about on this aspect of the permitting process. You really, you know, you have a finite amount of time, you can't do everything. And so those are important issues, and who knows, those could come up in the future. But right now, you know, we have three bill drafts just to review. The first one reforms the plan review procedures. That's from going from the appointment to also the first in, first out, as I had mentioned, as well as having a preliminary review. The second one is we've addressed incentivizes a local government plan review, and that expands the types and numbers of plans that can be reviewed by local governments with the delegated plan review authority. And then the third one, which we just talked about, was expanding the early start authority. So those are the three drafts that we have created that we will be bringing forth to the legislature as a result of this committee. Now, they're not yet set in stone. We will have another meeting or two, but that seems to be the general direction we're going. So we're not touching on every area. These are the ones we've focused on.
Well, let's bring in another caller, John in Appleton. Hi, John, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you both for your service. I'm wondering about if Mr. Strobel believes that DSPS has a staffing dearth, or I've heard that DSPS has put forth requests for more staff that have been unfilled. And then I'll have a follow-up, please.
John, yeah, okay. So staffing, number one. John, and what else would you like to know?
Okay, my second question is, you know, the state has laws on the books that prohibit municipalities from, say, establishing single-use plastic bans, and yet he's been talking very positively about letting more locals do the work. Well, there seems to be a contradiction there. You know, please address that.
John, thank you. State Senator Strobel.
Yeah, there's a uniform building code out there that applies to everywhere in the state of Wisconsin, and all construction has to conform to that. Now, possibly a municipality might go more restrictive, but they can't go any less than what the state uniform building code is. So that's not a problem in regards to construction.
And in terms of DSPS asking for more staffing that have been denied, what do you know there?
Well, what I do know is I believe they have a couple positions open right now that they have the ability to fill and they haven't filled. Now, these people aren't easy to locate. I understand that. But so I think part of that might be on them. But I don't think we've seen a substantial amount of increase in building permits. And certainly more and more of this work has been taken on by the locals through the delegated authority that began several years or so ago. And we want to even move more in that direction. So again, we're always open to what their requests are and to review those. But at this point in time, with more and more delegated authority, with positions that they have available that aren't even filled, that doesn't seem to be an issue.
One thing that came up at the August meeting, as I read the minutes, that inspection requirements could be evaluated, you suggested, to determine whether current inspection requirements are necessary. The committee was a bit reluctant there. What are those tensions?
We didn't really go into that, but there are inspection requirements that are like for plumbing cross connections, and they're annual. And we have seen that there's very rarely ever an issue with these cross connections. And they do cost money. And then that money ultimately gets passed on to the consumer, whether it's a commercial renter or a residential renter or a building owner or so on. And we potentially could have looked at some of that and say, is the frequency of these really supported? Do we need to force building owners to incur these costs as frequently as we do? There are some things out there, I think, that you could argue could be done not as frequently as are done now, because we're seeing them done annually, and there's very rarely ever any issues with them. So again, just a streamlining and a kind of common sense. Again, we didn't really touch on that in this committee, but I think those are areas that are potentially fertile for some review.
State Senator Strobel, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Dewey Strobel is a Republican state senator. District includes Sheboygan, Fond du Lac, and Ozaukee counties, among others. Chairs the 2022 Legislative Council Study Committee on the Commercial Building Permitting Process. You can find a link to the committee's work at our program page, wpr.org/mornings. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.